podcast is part of the Sports Social Podcast Network.
Hello and welcome to Zero Pucks Given, the UK ice hockey podcast. We're in partnership with the Hockey Art Co, hockey clothing for hockey people, worn by the best and hated by the rest. Listeners to Zero Pucks Given get a 10% discount off everything site-wide at hockeyartclothing.co.uk, so make sure you head over there and check out everything they've got, from the City Series to the Stadium Series and some of the real classic and retro stuff that they've got going on right now, as well as those incredible custom jerseys. Make sure you do check that out. Use the code ZP10 upon checkout and you will get your 10% discount. We are also in partnership and on the Sports Social Podcast Network. Incredibly thrilled to be on this network. So many awesome podcasts across the world from different sports people and media outlets as well. So it's a really, really great honour for us to be on there and getting this podcast out to as many people as possible. Right then, after our roundup episode, this is our episode where we're going to have a catch up with someone. And this week we have gone big time for you Solent Devils fans. We've got your player, coach, your head coach, the man who I call Mr. Solent. There's everything about this guy just screams Solent Devils. And we had a fantastic chat. I do hope you enjoy it. This is Alex Murray. Zero Pucks Given in partnership with the Hockey Art Co and on the Sports Social Podcast Network. Absolutely thrilled to welcome Mr. Solent himself, Alex Murray. How are you doing tonight, mate?
Yeah, good, mate. How are you? All good?
I'm really good, really good. It's getting a little bit warmer now. The little chill has gone out of the air where I am in Essex. Probably a little different for you on the south coast.
Yeah, we still get obviously the wind from the city, but it's actually better. I mean, I'm supposed to be probably a bit more used to the cold weather, I suppose. Not Scottish, though, mind you. So,
No. Yeah, it's all good. You've just had a little weekend off because it was a Cup semi-finals weekend, which you just missed out on literally by a point.
Yeah, it was. It's one of those, tale of two sides, really. You know, the positives are that we get to rest up for a weekend, and we've had a pretty demanding schedule start of Jan. You know, as you know, that three-game week straight off the Christmas break. And, the positives are we get a weekend to recover. We've got a lot of injury in the squad at the moment. The negative, obviously, is that our goal was to make the semis at a minimum, and I think when we looked at things just before Christmas, I was pretty confident we'd get 2 points out of Romford and Streatham, but that wasn't to be the case. Romford came with a great game, and we were unable to get the 2 points there. And then we had a lifeline at Streatham with the team that they were only able to put out. But credit to them, they played two, both teams respectively played two great games, and out the cup we went. So it was a bit of a bittersweet thing, but the positives are the guys are hungry now to get back on this weekend, and we got a big weekend ahead with Streatham and Chalmers back to back. So,
yeah, that is a big weekend. That's especially obviously Streatham coming to you for the early face off, and then travelling to Chelmsford on a Sunday. It's probably your longest away trip, isn't it? So
that and Milton Keynes probably, I think, as well is a bit of a trek. But yeah, look, it's the doubleheader weekends this year have been few and far between for us. That's because we're not in the additional cup this year. And again, there's been some positive and negatives to that. You know, guys are finding out even with just one game weekends, they're just as bad as they felt after two. your body just kind of gets into the state of that you're playing and off you go. But it's one of those weekends where we want to be competing at the highest level, and what better two teams to play at Streatham at home and Chalmers away to really test where you are and to, really put into practice what we have been trying to implement this year.
Yeah, that was something I was going to sort of mention with you, because obviously, you give your thoughts every time Solent plays, you give your thoughts to the podcast, which is, we're incredibly grateful for. That having this sort of one game weekend right from the start of the season, did you guys really struggle to sort of get into a rhythm?
Yeah, we're going for a bit of a rebuild as well. I think that's been obviously highlighted, and I say it a lot. But we really were in a position where the extra games in the cup meant that we were playing too much. You know, the demand on the players, bearing in mind we've got a Division Two team where we're closely linked, where five or six guys both play on a two-way. It just didn't seem right for us to add an additional 10 games onto a very heavy schedule already. For a team that are aging, and the younger players need the opportunity at the Division Two end. So going into it was a bit of an unknown. We haven't played this reduced schedule as often over the past, you know, 5-6 years. And I think the one big thing is, if you lose a game on the Saturday and you've got a double header, you know within yourself, well, you've got Sunday to put those little things right. We talk about it, we address it. You lose on a Saturday and don't play again until, say, next Saturday or Sunday. You've only got to practice on Thursday to talk about it. And it just sits with you. It grates. I mean, don't get me wrong, there's nothing wrong with losing two games back to back. But
it happens in this sport, doesn't it?
At least you got a chance to rectify it the day after. And if you didn't, well, it wasn't your weekend. You weren't good enough. But, you know, we lose to Romford in the shootout, and I've got to sit there and wait for 8 days to put that right. And we didn't put it right, if that makes sense. Now, then I've got to wait another 14 days. That is the one negative behind it. And as I mentioned to you guys, just find that they don't fall into the rhythm of, you know, chemistry in lines and the game itself. And actually, the injuries don't seem to be any different. We seem to still be picking up the same injuries as we were when we were playing doubleheaders. So it is food for thought. I mean, I'm still content with my decision and the reason behind it. It is working. The development for the players are that they're playing Division Two. The guys that need to play the extra games, and they're benefiting. Our Division Two team is more successful this year than it ever has been. Guys are able to play at Division Two in a more important role, which helps their development, and then they're able to implement themselves in our games in NIHL One. And the older guys that have got the families and the old bodies as such get that fine balance, because there's no sport like ours, as you know. There's not even professional footballers play Saturday, Sunday, if you know what I mean. And so for people with families, you know, or even a social life, a partner, you know, or another hobby, it completely takes your entire social aspect out of it during hockey season. So finding that balance is a really key thing. So there is, you know, the negative is we don't find a groove, but the positives are the players come back refreshed, come back positive, in a good mindset. The wives and girlfriends are more pleased that on the Sunday they've been taken out rather than trip to Chelmo. So it's finding that balance for us as a club, and I'm still not quite settled where we are. Probably would have liked three or four more games, which could have happened if we split that cup, but it is what it is.
Yeah, no, obviously they've gone back to sort of the old way of doing it, of having it with the league fixtures. The as you say, with some of the older players in the squad, I don't know if it's still the case with Jan Kostel coming in at Oxford now. Do you have the oldest player in the NIHL still?
Couldn't believe it. I mean, I think Oxford or something posted NIHL stats is, you know, off Joe's stats, that we were the oldest team in the league. And I thought, quickly, I need to sign the kid. So I rung up one of the kids who's just come back from Sweden and said, that's it. But not because of that reason, obviously. But I said, quickly, get you on the books. We need to lower our age. But it's really strange, because actually, if you look at us, my journey as a club, as you called it, you know, that Mr. Sonat or whatever.
Yeah.
When I first started 10 years ago or whatever it was, we were the youngest team in the league by far. You know, we had a two-way deal with Guildford under 18s. Two, three, four, five guys in our team were on two-ways from Guildford under 18s or the Phoenix. And all of our team were young players trying to make their way, you know, name-dropping people like George Norcliffe. At 20 years old, wanting to make a name for himself, and us giving them platforms. And so we were able, you know, as a young team, to help players become more exposed to that level of hockey, rather than this. And it's not so bad nowadays, but you know, you'd sign a team of 20 guys, of which five are 20-year-olds, and they all sit on the bench, and that's it. And then their development stagnates, and they end up either dropping out of hockey or dropping down the league. So yeah, I don't know if Drew is older than the guy from Oxford.
Well, they've got Darren Elliott back as well, haven't they? They're both 43, I think, Jan and Darren.
I think Drew's older than that. I mean, it's really strange. We have players on the team that are younger than some of his children.
Yeah.
It's insane. But to his credit, there's no one like him. If you ever had a chance to chat with him, there's nobody like him.
I have tried to reach out to Drew, actually, because when I put a little thing out for guests, a few Solent fans said Drew Campbell's got stories for days.
Oh, he's just an unbelievable character. The guy plays with his skates. Imagine putting your skates on and doing no pulling on the laces and just putting a little bow at the top. So he plays with, I don't know how he skates. And, I mean, sometimes he looks at me and I say, Drew, I need you back out there, mate. And he looks at me and goes, oh, and off he goes. And I think, I don't know where he gets the energy from, bless him. But he's an incredible player who's been so influential in helping the younger generations through his experiences. His skill set is unbelievable. And that goals that he scored in England, there's nothing to, there's nothing to take for granted of what he's done. It's unbelievable. And the guys love him, the younger guys, sometimes we pop up in the group chat, he's out with the 20-year-olds out on a night out, leading the way. He just loves it. He's a great guy. He's a great character in our room and someone that I've, worked alongside and played alongside for near on a decade now. So
your room is always a sort of a constant source of enjoyment for a lot of people, particularly with your captain's videos after a win or a 4-point weekend in your room. That place is jumping. Do you get involved in a bit of that, or you're a bit?
Yeah,
like...
I mean, if I'm being really honest, I'm always behind. Coley sits opposite me in the room.
Yeah.
And we're at the far end of the room. So when he gets up to record, he shows down the room. Does that make sense?
Yeah, yeah.
And so I'm just out of shot. But if I'm being really honest, I get in there late anyway. They're already all gearing up for this celebration, and it came about years ago. I mean, I've heard him talk on another podcast, I think, about it. Banners on the Wall, and it came about years ago with two songs. We used to have a winning song that we've changed, and then we basically have a theory about like a train rolling, and so we just linked these two songs together, and here we are. And it's just a great, we all play the game because we love it.
Yeah.
And winning a game is just as good as winning 50 games, if that makes sense. And when we first did it, it was when we were in our building process, if that makes sense. So we'd beaten Victor away 3-2, first time I've ever beat him in 10 years. It was an amazing feeling. And that feeling just has never left us. Every time we win a game, we still feel like it was the first win that we've won against said clubs. And we always are the underdog that goes up against many teams. Our reputation has kind of grown, I hope. And so people now take us as a serious contender in most things. And I think that's shown in most people when they talk about us. But you go back 5 years, we were just, it's Solent, whatever. And then, but we were turning teams over. And that excitement through that song, through our team's enjoyment of it, is really what brings us together as a team, bonds us. And it's kind of our ethos and how we kind of play. We're not a club that can offer people much at the players, if that makes sense. We're not one of the bigger financial teams in the league. We can't compete with some of the teams down the bottom financially. So actually, it's coming on board because they feel that it's a great place to play. It's a great locker room. There's a great team camaraderie, and that's kind of how I try and do it. And those little songs by Coley and all the team is just one way of us celebrating. We have many other ways. They just never make it onto social media. I don't think we'd get shut down.
But it's an incredible thing that yourself and all the sort of the top members of the club have done there, because you are virtually running on a shoestring in a shoebox. And as you say, last year particularly, no one considered you an underdog. It was, you finished second in the league, second in the playoffs, cup semi-final, and you gave a lot of teams bloody noses.
Just finished second for my entire career, I think, is where I'm going to be known as the runner-up. But no, look.
Bride.
You're right. There is positives of that, though. We don't look at it as, well, we didn't win the league. When we compare ourselves as a club, what we do with, we have wonderful volunteers, but as you mentioned, the rink is the rink. It is what it is. There's nothing we can do about that. There's nothing I can't go to every school and try and knock on the door and generate another 500 people coming through the door. There's no one to put them.
Exactly. Yeah.
And the team is what it is. The team is full of players that want to be at Solent, that want to play either for Solent or because they've heard good things. I like to sometimes think, without trying to sound, that I've built up a good reputation of how I like to coach, and people want to come and hopefully learn some things, and that's our way, because we can't go. There goes my daughter's light.
Your ring light's run out of charge.
My ring light is in trouble, but I just take that as a positive that we are a team that do compete with the other teams, and that's a real positive for us. And yeah, while second isn't ideal, don't get me wrong, I've been second, I think, the last five seasons. There is some positives there, and we do look at the positives, because ultimately that keeps us going.
Yeah, I mean, one of the games, especially from last season, that I think if anyone wants to know what Solent is all about, watch that playoff semi-final with Invicta. Just watch the last 5 minutes. And that was absolutely astonishing.
Yeah, it was pretty good. It was. Don't get me wrong. I was on the ice. I think it was Husker scored the third, and we were slightly pushing then at 2-1 down. I think it was all, 2-1 down. And the goal was just out of nothing. I think he came down the right wing, whipped in a little twister wrister, and in it went. And I just looked up to the Evans and thought, that's it. And then I'm a very sort of like proud person. Like I'm a very like, no, that's not it. That we'll find a way. And I. Very big belief in myself. Some people call me delusional, but it's just a belief that we'll figure it out in the end. Does that make sense? So we called a timeout, and I said to the guys, this is what we're going to do. Like, we're just going to get Chico off for the face-off. We're going to run this set play, and here it is. This is what I want us to do. And it worked. And we're all looking at each other going, there's still like 2 minutes left. And we had no timeout at that point. So I said, let's just do exactly the same thing. And if I'm being really honest, I thought Invicta would, of seeing what we did in the first one and how we overloaded one side and we were just roaring to that side and counteracted it. But somehow, hook or by crook, the hockey gods, as it were, whatever you want to call it, same play, worked exactly the same way. And yeah, the rest is history. Obviously, they unfortunately, as you'd have heard, self-combusted a little bit.
Yeah.
And it almost felt like that 5 minutes took everything out of us. And so come Sunday, even though we were there and we were ready, we weren't. Does that make sense? Goal in the first minute. When I reflect on that weekend, I just think all of our emotion, our energy was put into that last 5 minutes against Invicta and the overtime to get the eventual winner. And the emotion at the end of that game with the amount of support we had there was just unbelievable. I just kind of felt like mentally we needed to be like, yeah, that's okay, right, on to the next one. Does that make sense? Like that.
But that's what you said to me afterwards, because we spoke after that game. It must have been about 10 o'clock at night, still in the rink at Milton Keynes.
Yeah.
And you said, that was brilliant, but we need to forget it and start thinking about tomorrow.
Yeah, and it was really strange because lots of us hadn't arranged to stay up. Lots of us were, I've got young children, for example, so I was a bit like, well, if we go out, I'm not wasting a night up. I want to get home and see my children. Also, I don't mind driving back and coming back up. But that emotion of that evening meant that lots of us ended up just booking somewhere last minute, staying up, went out for some food. And we woke up, I woke up to a message from Chico saying, this is going to be it. This is my last hurrah.
Oh, wow. That's how you found out, is it?
Well, a private message, it was very long. It was like 6 a.m. or whatever. And then obviously he told the boys in our group chat, this is going to be my last game. And I think just emotions just went from us, if that makes sense. Like it was to lose we didn't lose him for the final, of course.
No.
But to have the biggest pillar in your club for the last 10 years, cool time, which no one would blame him for. The guy was an absolute warrior. His body is destroyed because of his commitment to our club. It just meant that emotion from the Saturday, of going through that entire process and then everyone having to process the fact that this might be, we always thought, well, maybe not, We always joke in our room, we've got a couple of guys that love to retire and then not retire and all the rest of it. So,
well, you see that happening all over the place, don't you? The retirements lasting 3 months and stuff.
Hockey's an addiction.
Well, from that game, I mean, they talk about some sports. I'm going to stand up. I'll probably disappear off the camera.
That's all right.
Because of the green screen. They talk about sports players liking memorabilia. This is yours.
Is it?
From that playoff semi-final.
Oh, bloody hell.
It broke in half in the third. You went to take a shot and it just grazed the ice and snapped in half. And
didn't go in the stand, did it? It didn't fly in the stand.
Fly in the stand, unfortunately. I spoke to your equipment manager when I was waiting for you to come out of the locker room.
And, mate, I'm humbled by that. That for me, I'm just, if I look at it, I'm just a guy who plays hockey because he enjoys it. And when I see people, like yourself, or when we were at, that playoff weekend and we've got 50 to 70, I don't want to say 100 because I don't think there was 100 there, but...
On the second day, there probably was, because more came up on the second day and you had a fan who had a Dewalt drill-powered horn.
Yeah, he loved it. But that, for me, is so humbling as a person, because we're not, I go to work Monday to Friday, 9 to 5.
Yeah.
I'm not a professional sportsman, but to see so many people support us and want you to take a picture of them or want... You get a little bit starstruck by it, even at my, even at my age, at 30, however old I am. But
yeah, you're not going to say.
Yeah, NHL stats will crack our age up again. We'll be double the age. It's just so it's like I said, you're a bit starstruck by it, or if that makes sense, you're a bit overwhelmed by it. You're humbled by it. You to have that there, mate, is a humbling thing for me, because ultimately, who am I? Do you know what I mean? But
that was just such an incredible game.
It was.
My daughter was with me, because my daughter comes with me. She does my videos now, so she'll be coming with me for this year's playoffs as well. And she said, I really want someone's stick. And I said, well, Muzzle's broke in the third. Go and see if you can have it.
Yeah, well, look, next time I see you, if you want me to give it a little
swivel. Oh, yeah, still got the white tape on it. Yeah, I was tempted to use it, like put Zero Pucks Given on it and stick the little microphone on the end like people are doing. But I couldn't write that on your stick.
Well, you can if you want. I like that. Tell me, I go through phases of sticks. I go through phases of breaking up three in 3 weeks, and then one lasts the rest of the year. It's crazy, the sticks, but yeah, I don't even remember breaking mine, actually. I think was I on the point, actually, on the power play? Yeah, I was.
Yeah.
I do remember now. Yes,
because it was like it was the most minuscule of touches. It just grazed the ice.
Yes, I do remember. And then I push the puck with my foot or my hand or whatever, and Invicta were going a bit
crazy. Get it out of the way. And then you
stayed on. Like, quick, get off. And I flew off, obviously, at top speed. So, But no, look, that weekend itself was a roller coaster. And ever since then, we've been in sort of this little rebuild phase. But
yeah. Which is tough, isn't it, for a lot of teams when they have that period where they have to rebuild. But you, like you say, the young players that you've got, I think, are settling in really well, especially the guys that are on the two ways. As a club as a whole, do you have any involvement with the Amazons that are doing quite well in the women? Is there anyone there that could possibly step up for your two team or yourself?
So I will be honest and say no, that I'm not really involved with the Amazons. That said, I know the people that are involved with it, and I get on very well with them. I would like and share their stuff, and I know a lot of their players, although not personally, just, I could probably name you 10 players out of just the fact that I look at their stuff and see it on socials.
Yeah.
And they're doing some great stuff. It's the same people that started, the Amazons, the Fitzpatricks, James Morgan, their coach, a couple of other people, were the same people that started the Devils 15 years ago. It's a mindset of people that just, every club has them, right? The people that just work tirelessly as volunteers for the benefit of the people that play within their club. And that, I know a couple of years ago they were going toe to toe at the top of the Division One, and a little bit of promotion was on the horizon. Girls at our club, including the juniors, are really successful. Lots of our girls are in the England programs. Lots of our girls play for the Bees as well. The women, the under 16s, if that makes sense. And that's just a great stepping stone for them, Do I think any are ready for us? I wouldn't say I'd know enough about them to give that indecision. We did used to have, years ago, we had Lucy Beale as part of our Div 2. team. She's obviously just been selected for the GB women's team.
Yeah.
But before she moved out on a scholarship out to the States, she was part of our Div 2 team, and I was Lucy's biggest fan. In fact, every training session, she would be the person that I highlighted in a drill who's listening, doing what they're supposed to do, while the boys are being boys, messing around with pucks, talking in the queues. I don't know what's going on. And then Lucy comes out. I think she was 18 years old, coming out, every drill spot on. And my drills are quite fluid, high intensity. So there's five things going on at once, because I want guys and girls to be ready. You know, your mind is switched on, focused. In a game, there's 10 things that's happening at once, so is the drill going to reflect that? And she was just fantastic at always remembering things and always getting it right. And so I used her every week to stop the team and go, right, let's watch Lucy do this. Fellas, what are you doing? You're sat over there messing around, shooting pucks around. I'm going to make your bag stay in a minute if you don't switch on. And since Lucy, we haven't really had anyone come through. There's a couple of girls, 16s and 18s, that I'd be really interested to see how they develop. The biggest issue with the crossover, speaking openly, is that physicality level.
Yeah.
Skill set wise, we've got a couple of girls in the England program at 15s and 16s. That would be absolutely fine. Absolutely fine. And they are actual warriors anyway. They train up, then play with the 18s. They're absolutely warriors. It's just that switchover is quite a big jump, right? So, I mean, we played against, I can't remember the young lady's name, in Romford. Is it?
Ellie Wakeley.
I mean, credit to her, she holds her own, don't you?
Yeah.
You don't see many do it, if that makes sense. And that's.
Yeah, no, there isn't many.
I'm not sure where that is, but lots of the girls obviously are happy with that women's league that is quite competitive. You know, I know Bracknell used to
run
years, so
yeah, really, yeah, really stuff.
Having daughters myself, although not in ice hockey, I'm a big believer in that, you know, women can and girls can, and we should give them every platform. And that's something that I'd always look out for. Like I said, unfortunately, I don't know enough about the Amazons. It's probably the only part of the Solent that I'm not as involved with. I've got to see my children and do something else.
Yeah, of course, yeah.
I actually probably play roller hockey on the Wednesday, actually, when they train, so.
Yeah.
But they're doing great things, and their socials have come on, their performances have come on. As I said, in the recent years, they've been quite well. I don't think they're doing as well this year when I last looked at the league table, but that said, they've got a great core group that have been there for years. They all came through the junior club anyway, and so they're now attracting other people across, and who knows, we'll never say never, put it that way.
Yeah, absolutely. So how long has it been that you've been the player coach and had more responsibilities than just being a player?
Oh, I don't know, I think it's 10 years, maybe 11.
I think it might be 10 or 11 years.
I don't know, this seems it's all emerged. I obviously played 5 years on the Isle of Wight for the Raiders, and then my last year then sort of, I'll be honest, you probably ended a bit earlier than I'd have liked, but we kind of, me and Corny, who, you know, were good friends at the time and had good respect. We just didn't quite see eye to eye where we were in terms of how we looked, in terms of me as a player and him, what he wanted from me and what that meant. And so in the end, it kind of just fizzled out, if that makes sense, over one summer. And I believe that their mum will not be impressed, but my second daughter, Amelia, was on the way.
Yeah.
So it kind of just meant, you know, training twice a week on the island, playing an away, you know, a home game, which is an away game on the island, and then travelling away, you know, four or five times a week. And it wasn't exactly down the road, which Gosport is. I kind of went, all right, I need to take a little bit of a step back. So I think in my first year, I was coach within 6 months, I think. The coach at the time, Will Francis, there was a bit of an internal thing. Will stepped away, and I remember Paul Fitzpatrick, who was the manager at the time, and a couple other people just said, did you want to do it? And I think I was like 24 at the time. But I'd been coaching in the junior club and leading lots of things since I was about 12, 13 with my dad.
Yeah.
My dad was the former head coach at the junior club, so I was always on the learn-to-play sessions, the 10s, the 12s. At 17, I was assistant coach to England 13s, or Southwest 13, sorry. Players like Floyd Taylor that, you know, went on to Jordan Gregory. I coached at conference at 13, you know, Southwest England.
Yeah.
So I had loads of exposure and experience at a young age that it kind of just felt quite natural. And I think the deciding factor was the players. You know, there was a lot of senior guys there that had been senior to me when I was coming back into that room. You know, Andrew Goddard, Chris Abbott, Kent Johnson, guys that probably don't, you know, ring names to you, but are very well known at our club, if that makes sense. And were part of the massive success that got them promoted out of Div 2.
Yeah.
And when they all seemed okay with it and were happy for it, you know, I'm 10 years younger than most of those guys. It kind of just took off from there, and I had my own way. I brought in a guy called Steve Gannaway. I don't know if you'd know Steve, but a very, very renowned name back in the old EPL days for the Whitelink Raiders. Was part of the Bracknell Bees coaching team as well for many years. Was a really close family friend, and was one of the main influences in how I coached, because I played alongside him on the island. I'm sure he won't be saying he was a bit older than me, so he was at the end of his career as I was at the start. But he taught me so much about what the expectations are in terms of being a, you know, professional hockey player. Not that I ever was, but his expectation never changed. You know, it doesn't matter if you're an amateur or a professional. You turn up for a game and you're prepared for said game, no matter what. You're not turning up eating a KFC or whatever, or on your phone, you know, or letting things come into the room. And so I basically, you know, one day sat down with him. We wrote a player's pack about my philosophy with him, you know, supporting it. We wrote some systems, and still to this day, all the players joke about it. We still use the same player pack. We hand it out every year. We talk through everything, what it takes to be a Devil, what my philosophy is, what your commitment has got to be to play for our club, and the systems. I'm very systematic. If they do this, we do that. And that was what we needed to do when we weren't as skilled playing in this league.
Yeah.
And we were a much younger team playing against the high-end teams. Back in the day, you know, Chancellor with Gary Clark, Ross Breers, all of these unbelievable, James Ailey, you know, all these players. The way we compete against them is we had a system that they had to try and break down, and we relied heavily on Chico to then, if the system failed, well, Chico would bail us out.
Yeah.
That sort of thing. So, yeah, 10 years, 11 years, I think, to go back to your original question, but it's all just kind of amalgamated, actually, if I'm being really honest.
I can imagine it probably has, yeah. Who's in that Whitelink side when you're over there? Because there are some proper names from British hockey that have been through that club.
Oh, yeah. I mean, obviously, Corny was our coach, great guy.
Was Sam Chamer in there when you were down there?
Nah, he played the year after me, I think. I think, you know, Brad Watchorn is a name that you would know that played when I played there. I remember for 4 years he chased Corny around, you know, trying to get him to fight him. And then Corny thought, you know what, if I sign that guy, we had the two toughest guys in the league, and we just walked around owning the place. You know, no one would touch us. We had our way of playing, and it's almost like the Streatham of now. That most teams go in slightly hesitant about them. Does that make sense?
Yeah, they've almost got that sort of Mike Tyson
fear factor. And the rest of the team play with that no fear when you know that you've got. If I've got caught, I mean, I play the line with Jeremy Cornish. No matter what happened to me, I'm okay. I remember in Cardiff, I got completely cleaned out mid ice. I head down, skated through the middle of the rink, and I got completely cleaned out. Before it even got up, Corny was there, gloves dropped. Yeah, no worries, I'll take care of it. And that gives you a sense of confidence, if that makes sense. I'm trying to think, guys, that you would know. I mean, we had a guy called Robbie Brown, absolute beauty from Belfast, had come over. He was a kid in the Elite League, and we'd brought him over. Nathan Taylor was playing for Newcastle Vipers back then. Again, you're talking 15, I'm sure I'm my age now, but 15 years ago.
Yeah, see, I've been in sort of 4 or 5 years, but I've done a bit of research as to the old ways of it all and some of the old names. Just before the end of last year, I had Pete Wynn on the podcast. He told me the story about the old Vipers and stuff. But brilliant.
Yeah, I mean, people that you may know, like Richard Facey, who eventually came over with me to Solent, Ben Locke came over with me, Steve Gossett came over with me. All these guys basically, you know, decided that actually it was time, you know, to come over and try something different. But, you know, who's still playing now? Not many. Not during my time, anyway. You know, I think Paints went over the year after me. Steve Osmond went over the year after me. Trying to think. I don't know if you know Matty Colclough, great goaltender back in the day, one of the closest friends that is retired, but played at Streatham after the Ireland. Yeah, it was. I mean, the likes of Cheeman that went over a bit later than me, if that makes sense. I'd already set up at Solent, and yeah, we're starting my journey there.
Yeah, and long may it continue, of course, as well.
Well, I don't know how much longer. My body's, you know, telling me, you know, you better start looking after yourself, and I'm thinking, just wing for a few more years. But yeah, we'll see. We'll see how it goes.
Would it be your plan then, when for instance, as you say, your body gives up, for you to just step away from the ice and carry on as the coach?
I know. I mean, everyone that knows me personally would know that I don't really take care of myself at all. I don't, you know, if I get injured, the physio gives me a list of things and I'll say, I don't do medicine, I don't do anything, if that makes sense. I don't
do physio is the worst.
Yeah, but a little, I'm just really strange. Like, I don't do anything to help myself and then wonder why I'm struggling at times. You know, I don't take paracetamol and things like that. I'm just really against it. I don't know why. I just feel like I have this mindset that your body would figure it out. Now, that was great at 24. It used to work all the time. Yeah, my body would figure it out, and then, yeah, it did. And now at 34, it doesn't work it out as quickly. It seems to take a little bit longer, and I've got, you know, playing hockey for 30 years of my life, the injuries that you've had over the years, they start to take a toll on you, even things like going to sleep now. You know, going to sleep with two knees that are completely done, you know, they're expired, you know, is a big task. You know, I have to kind of wrap, you know, roll things up, put them between legs, make sure my legs are in certain places. Otherwise, if my knees are in the wrong place, I'll wake up, or I'm going to go to sleep, and then I'd wake up in pain for the rest of the next day. Even things like starting to get like achy arthritis in the hands, because I hold a stick 5 times a week for the last 30 years. And I do coach, you know, if you look at a Tuesday, Thursday, I'd coach for 3 hours before I start my own session.
Yeah.
So, just little things like that are the things that are frustrating me at the moment. But
then you said tonight, you said you're going to do 7-a-side. Wednesday night, you said you've got roller hockey. Yeah, practice time to start slowing down on other things.
Yeah, it's strange. It's strange. You'd think I'd be fit as a fiddle, you know. You'd think I would be fit as a fiddle. Like, I play 7-a-side now tonight, most Mondays. I play, yeah, inline on Wednesdays, which the guys will dig me out for, because, you know, they all dig it out a little bit in the team. But every time I dig it out, I just sign another roller guy just to add on, just to add even the balance out.
But when Pete was on, because Pete's a roller guy.
He is.
And he said, you know, look at, you know, Connor McDavid, Connor Bedard. You know, these guys are all roller players.
Yeah.
So it was good enough for the NHL. Why ain't it good enough for over here?
Don't get me wrong. You know, it has its positive and negatives. You know, your skill set in terms of your hand-eye coordination probably increases, but you pick up a lot of bad habits.
Yeah.
It's a non-contact sport. So then you then have this sense of security that, yeah, or I could toe drag someone, or I could stick hand around someone in roller, they can't do anything about it.
Yeah.
You get onto the ice, they'll absolutely level you, and you think, I forgot. Your skating stride goes off a little bit as well, obviously, because it's a different stride, it's a different technique. So. Yeah.
Why is that then that hockey players refer to skates as new wheels?
It's crazy, isn't it? Yeah, because, yeah, I don't know. Yeah, and also, when we talk about trying to increase our speed as, you know, as a coach, I'd always say wheels, rather than, you know, move your blades, move those skate blades over there. It doesn't sound as good, does it? So
we've had a few questions come in on the socials for you. Some quite interesting ones, actually.
Sure.
Sophia has asked a couple of questions. I'm assuming this is probably going to be because of your dad. What got you into ice hockey?
Yeah, it's my dad. Yeah, I mean, bless him. I mean, we were my dad's second family, so my dad was already a little bit older when we'd turned up on the scene. I think I was involved with the, but by that time my dad had had his career. My dad had played in Belgium, across Europe, was the first professional player in the country, I believe. Played an exhibition game in Madison Square Gardens against the New York Rangers. His CV was unbelievable. And the last two generations don't really know him. But if you go back a generation before that, that's how I was known. Everyone used to go. I remember when I went to the island my first year, Gareth Endicott from Swindon.
Yeah.
His son, Ollie, plays in Leeds at the moment. That's the only reason he knew my name. It was like, oh, I know your dad, Pete. And that's how I was sort of known in the hockey world. I was always seen as, well, you're Pete's son. Yeah, from that generation. Oh, don't get me wrong, the generation slightly above me now, and my own generation, everyone below, you probably won't know my dad too well, if that makes sense. But to say, you know, I'm not someone that blows, you know, my own family's trumpet, to say he was an influential person in hockey in this country, it would be an understatement. You know, the things that he's done and did. He was part of England and GB for many years as a player, as a coach. When I was 3 years old, I think he was part of Gosport as the chairman, head coach, something like that. And so in we went. You know, my elder brother Lee played out of Swindon originally. even though we were Southampton based, so we're based in Southampton.
Yeah.
My dad was coaching in Swindon. My older brother played there, so that's where some people we're known. You know, if we go to Swindon and the older guys would know a bit about our family, that's because my dad was there. My dad spent some time in Bristol, so yeah, come free. I think I was on the ice with dad, with the brothers, and that was it really. I never stopped. I think I dropped out for a year to play like field hockey and football at like 12, 13, just because at school it's really hard. Like at school, yeah. You've got no one. Who'd you talk to about the sport?
They'll just
go, "What are you on about?" And I'm like, "Well, all my mates are off. They've all gone and they're all going to meet up because they've got a game of football today at 3 o'clock, and they're all meeting before." And I'm like, "Yeah, all right, cheers. I'm off to Cardiff for my closest fixture. Do you know what I mean? Like or whatever." And they're just going down across the road to play a game of football. So other than a year, I think I dipped out around 12, 14, where I concentrated on field hockey and football. I've played it ever since I was three, and dad was a massive influence in that. And up until the day, you know, dad passed, he would be at every home game, you know, on the Isle of Wight. Everyone treated him so nicely. He'd always have his same seat, and the management there would look after him. And then in Solent, you know, he still has his corner to this day where my family have their season tickets, where my dad sits, or did sit. And my brother and his family now have it as their season ticket space. And yeah, it's a bit emotional to talk about it, especially in that first year past after COVID. It was really strange not having my dad there, because he's my biggest critic and probably the only person that I would ever, although I'd always tell him, yeah, all right, dad, whatever.
Yeah.
You know, I remember juniors, let's say we won a game 8-7 and I was involved in every goal. He wouldn't compliment me at all. He'd critique the fact that I was on for four of the goals against or something. Do you know what I mean? And that's what my dad was like. And that's how I am as a coach as well. Like, I've taken that on board. I always say to the guys that if you're playing in my team, I like you as a player and I think you deserve to be here. If you want an arm around you, I ain't going to do it, because we're all grown men here. Mm. And I want to make us as a club better and you as an individual better. So I'm going to tell you what you're doing wrong. And I use Jock. Jock's a great, my assistant coach, my bench coach.
Yeah.
I say, Jock, you've got to be the positive guy, and he's great at it. He finds so many nice things to say about guys. I just can't do it. I look at guys. It's just like my dad was just to me the same. You know, very to the point, very untactful, if you know what I mean. Very black and white.
Did it ever feel like pressure when you were playing?
Massive pressure. In certain parts, you know, as I mentioned, my generation and the generation just above me, it wasn't really that much impacted. But as a junior, you go to, like I said, if I played a home game, away game in Swindon, people would just come up to me and talk to me like they know me. They clearly did know me, but I wouldn't have a clue who they were. And they knew me, my dad, my family, how's your mum? And I'd be like, who are you? Not being disrespectful at all, but obviously they'd have played with my dad 25 years ago.
Yeah.
And I'm 10 years old, if that makes sense. And they would tell stories about, you know, all of their, you know, these are England players, these are GB players. And I'm thinking, I'm just a 10-year-old kid, do you know what I mean? So even that pressure as you grow older, the family name, you know, holds a bit of weight in the sport. Again, a bit older now, not so much in this generation. And with that comes a little bit of responsibility and, you know, accountability for it, if you know what I mean. But, yeah, I'm proud of what we've done as a family in the sport. I'm proud of what we've done in this club in particular. My dad did a lot more for the likes of Blackburn, Bristol before me. So, yeah, can't say I'm too disappointed. It might end, you know, my younger brother's got a young boy in the that seems to enjoy it, but my girls have no interest in it. So, yeah, we're putting all our eggs in Jack's, our youngest of the children now.
It's about time for another Murray to feel the pressure.
Yeah, we were three boys, and the first three children in our family were all girls. My brother's eldest is a girl, and both mine children are girls. But that's great. Like, don't get me wrong. I love the fact that I don't have to take my children to a hockey rink. I do that for myself, and then I go horse riding, dancing, swimming, gymnastics, or the rest, and I get to be like a dad, if that makes sense.
Yeah, no, absolutely.
Rather than a coach coaching your children on the ice, I don't think I'd be very good at them.
No, it could change the dynamic of your relationship as well with your kids, because my daughter sort of started with boxing when I was boxing, and she really enjoyed it, and I got her mum to sort of allow her that when she was going to turn over as amateur, I was going to be involved in sort of helping a coach. I couldn't be her actual coach because I wasn't amateur licensed, and then COVID hit, and then it all stopped, and afterwards she didn't want to pick it back up again. But I know she can handle herself now.
So. Yeah, well, don't want to meet her in the street corner. Well, remember not to echo her when she's doing the recording, that's for sure.
No, no, and boys ain't a worry for me.
Yeah, exactly. Well, that's, I'm thinking we'll be here all day talking about boys and worry, but we know what we were like when we were kids. I just think it's just that I still do it now. My eldest is a horse rider, and sometimes I'm trying to coach her, and I think, no, this is not my area of expertise. I don't actually know what I'm talking about. Just go and stand at the side. And so I do, where I can, as best I can. But then there's always that burning desire inside me to go, come on.
As a dad, you're a kind of a jack of all trades, aren't you? So you kind of have to know a little bit about everything. But that automatically means you know everything.
The thing is when they get older, that's great up until they're 10, 12. My eldest is 12. Then they start knowing things more about, you know, certain subjects, and you can't lie to them. You just can't wing it.
No.
Yeah, sure, it's that. Yeah, they're going, nah, here it is. She rips out her phone. I've asked whatever these gadgets and stuff are nowadays, and they know more than me, so.
Yeah. Mine's nearly 14 now, so I'm, I can't wing at anything anymore.
No. It's really strange, because I have fully grown men listening to everything I ask them to do, and I have a 12-year-old tell me no.
Yeah,
and I'm like, so I was just try and avoid it.
Yeah. So Piers asked the second question as well, which is a great question. I've never heard anyone ask it. Have you ever had a fear of the sport?
So I think I went through a little phase where I don't know if you know, you probably don't, but I don't know. 8 years ago, I completely snapped my jaw, and broke my nose in a hit by a guy called Dominic Hopkins, who at the time was playing, I think, for Oxford. Don't quote me. I think it was Oxford. We were playing and he was a teammate of mine on the island, and don't get me wrong, great, great player, great guy, but basically just his shoulder, he's about 6'6". And I remember the blame was the ref. I remember it like it was yesterday. I get to the blue line, I chip the puck in, I'm watching, doing the old bad thing of watching the puck being... thinking, yeah, that's a good dump. Next thing, I'm flat on the ground, and I just feel this massive pain in my face, and basically, my jaw had completely snapped off clean, and was just down here. And so I had to be put under and had to operate, and I had to have plates, and I've got loads of steel in my face from it, and it was my first ever bone that I broke ever in my life. And I think when you talk about fear, I think it's not a fear, but I think I became more consciously aware rather than subconsciously aware of my face and where I was going.
Yeah.
The year after, Danny Rose, who now plays for the Bees, at the time was playing for Streatham, randomly in his own DN had the puck, and I was forechecking him. And just, again, it was a mistake, but shot the puck, hit me straight at my nose, broke my nose again, and severed my entire lip. So I had to have like surgery on my lip to put it together. Again, the only other thing that I broke. Two hockey injuries, which were pucks or something to the face. So I think when you talk about fear, I think my only conscious fear at the moment would be, and it's not so bad nowadays because it's been a few years, is just, what's my face doing?
Yeah.
And I often find myself doing this.
Do you think people have to have, rather than fear, more of a healthy respect of how dangerous the sport is?
Yeah, I mean, look, we all know what happened with the net guard, in, you know, the Johnson thing from the Panthers. And whilst I was a little bit like, to start with, I was someone who wore a cage for my first year of seniors because I just felt comfortable doing it. And back then, however many years ago that was, you were peer pressured into taking that off. Fact. And it's not something that I do. I don't pressure anyone to take any of their cages off if they want to wear it. And I don't think it would be a bad thing if we looked at bringing that back in for amateur sport. You know, I'm just thinking, I teach PE in school. I remember after I did my draw on my face, I had to go back in with stitches all hanging out, butterfly, you know, Vaseline literally covering my face in loads of places. And children weren't exactly the best pleased to see me looking like that. And I'm thinking, well, why did I bother doing that? Like, what was the point? You know, it's impacting what I'm doing in life. You know, my children were a bit like, whoa, what's this? Like, what do you look like?
Yeah.
So I'm pleased to see that the net guard rule is in. I don't have an issue with it. I thought I would. I don't mind the net guard that I've got. Later on, I bet to buy three net guards to find the one that suited me, but that's for every bit of equipment, right?
Yeah, it's quite comfortable, isn't it?
Yeah, so I think my only fear is my face from previous injuries. I don't have a fear of failing. Like I said, I'm pretty confident. I don't have any fears of, you know, not being successful or anything like that. I just think, yeah, I just worry slightly. If a puck goes out to a point or whatever, or I'm a certain distance away, subconsciously or consciously now, I would put my hand by my face. And that impacts the way I play, because then ultimately I haven't got my two hands. I'm not ready. I'm more worried about my face. Does that make sense?
Yeah.
That's the best I can answer that question, I suppose. Hopefully no players are seeing that and start taking advantage of it. But
no.
I think everyone is naturally more aware of it now. I think that incident with having in Sheffield recently just makes everyone more subconsciously aware of what you're doing and how you're doing.
Yeah.
No one ever thought that they would go, I don't ever think that I'm going to hockey and not coming back.
No, absolutely.
Might be that I might be hobbling back, you know, with a bruised leg.
Yeah.
And so that just makes you feel a little bit different, you know, I think. But yeah, I'm also practical. I also think that was one in a how many hockey games play.
Yeah, yeah. Well, what's amazing since is obviously that some of the stuff that was said online, that obviously by people that have no understanding of the game, that you, I think even people that do understand the game are seeing how often skates do go high in the air.
Yeah,
I saw it three times at Chelmsford last night.
Yeah, I saw this Twitter feed from the NHL, which is a random account, who basically posted circa 100 pictures on his Twitter of near misses in the NHL, just pictures of a blade just going like this, or just miss it. Do you know what I mean? Things like that happen all the time. There's risk in our sport, just like there's risk in playing rugby, if you know what I mean. The big challenge is like you said, no one thought that risk would lead to you not going home.
No.
And I remember a few years ago, a guy died from fighting. I think it was in Germany. Fell on the back of his head. Done. But that impact was less impactful because it was in another country.
Yes, of course.
And whilst you read the story, it wasn't on your news feeds. It wasn't in your algorithms. I mean, the incident in Sheffield was everywhere for 2 weeks. Absolutely everywhere. And what you got is you got big sports networks like your Sky Sports News or your TNT, back then BT or whatever it was, trying to give opinion when they've never shown interest in our sport before.
No.
And they don't have the most informed people giving you the most up-to-date, not, you know, information.
No, it was virtue signaling, really. That's all they were doing.
Misguiding. And striking too much fear into the eyes of everyone. When realistically speaking, has a footballer died in the last 10 years? I'm pretty sure one would.
Oh, look, well, I could think of at least four that have had heart attacks on the pitch in the last 10 years.
Yeah, you know, so you could walk out on the road and get hit by a bus. I'm very much like that. I'm very karma and fate and all the rest of it. I'm very much like, there's no point. Don't worry about walking over three drains. If you're meant to get hit by a bus, you're going to get hit by a bus, and that's it. If you know what I mean. If it's your day, it's your day. If you spend your life worrying about your day, you don't live your life. So I don't have any fear in that aspect.
No. And what we've just been discussing is pure proof that you only live once. So
yeah, you just got to get on with it.
You just got to get on with it.
And hopefully it's a little bit further away than someone else's.
Yeah. James Young has asked, if you could choose a different sport to be good enough in, what would it be?
I've always loved cricket.
Oh, really?
You know, cricket's got like, it's like Marmite, isn't it? People don't like watching tests.
Yeah, I love tests. But trying to tell someone why you love it when they don't understand it is very difficult.
Yeah, I mean, don't get me wrong. As I've said a few times, I delusionally back myself at anything. The guys that know me, I'll always go, smash it, anything. Other than running. If it's running, no chance. Skating in a straight line, no chance. Well, skating at all. Anything to do with fitness, not a chance. Anything to do with gym, not a chance. But with cricket, I'll be like, yeah, get me in the bat. I'll top score all of you, but no problem. I'm very self-confident with things like that. And so cricket is probably the one sport that I'd love to have had a go at. I never did. You know Dynamis, who do the kit, the shirt and stuff? Alex, who is the guy who runs Dynamis, is a massive cricket player, massive fan. And when he first started on his journey, it was just us. Solent was his first club that took on his shirt.
Oh, that's amazing.
Yeah. He was out of Gosport originally from Gosport. in terms of that was where the product and his stuff was. And he was a major cricket fan, and he was sponsoring Herschel Gibbs at the time. So, you know,
yeah,
crazy. Telling me, took me to his factory, here's Herschel Gibbs and stuff. And I said, you know what, I wish I played cricket. And bless him, he's such a nice guy, Alex. The next time I went there, he had a bag packed for me, a cricket bag, with pads, bats, gloves, helmet. He said, here you are, if you want to give it a go, give it a go.
Oh, wow.
And to this day, it's still in my shed. Brand spanking new, looking great. I need to do it.
White is not flattering either, is it?
No. I'm going to play T20 so we can wear some white
colourful.
Stripe colours or something, do you know what I mean? Or black or something, do you know what I mean?
So. Yeah, vertical stripes. Archie Jones has asked a great question. This might be a bit difficult being coach and player. Who's your favourite teammate?
I've got a few. Obviously, one of my closest friends is Richard Facing. We played together for more than 10 years, and we played most of our juniors together. And he was saying he was my right hand man doesn't do him justice, if that makes sense. But he was a leader on the ice, off the ice. I don't listen to a lot of people. I'm very stuck in my ways. But he was someone that I'd always take advice from and listen to. And we kind of went on. Once Richard came over from the island, that was when our real success started. You know, I'm not putting it straight on Richard, but it was just like a two-man band. And I take a lot of credit for that, if that makes sense. A lot of people think it's just me, but there was a lot of people that were linked to that. Richard is probably, if I had to choose one person over my career, it would be him. Right now, I don't know if I could choose someone right now. I've got a few people that I confide in, put it that way, if that makes sense. There's a few guys, senior guys, that I trust and speak to. And I trust them all, but when it comes to coaching, it doesn't make sense to go to every single player about a coaching decision. They'll all think, hang on a minute, aren't you the coach?
Yeah.
So I go to a few.
Too many chefs, I suppose, as well.
Yeah, agreed. So I just have I speak to Jock, who's my assistant coach, a lot, especially on game days. And there's a few players who I rely on to give me the hard truths, because sometimes as a player, you're respectful of your coach. You're not going to tell them exactly what you think. And most that know me well know that I bite, you know, I'll bite back a little bit as well. I'm not the most placid of people. I don't really have one right now. If I choose one over my career, it'd be Richard. But I think most people would know that anyway.
Yeah, excellent. Alex Murray, thank you so much for your time. Really have enjoyed having you on the podcast. Obviously, we've done a couple of interviews up in Milton Keynes last year for the playoffs.
Yeah.
And hopefully we'll be doing that again this year, wherever they may be.
Yeah, fingers crossed that we make it this year. We've got a bit of an uphill task, but we're getting there. You know, we've had some good results, we've had some bad results, and it's just finding that rhythm, I think. I think our goal, looking at where we are now, would probably be trying to push for third, fourth. You know, if we have a good run, maybe second. But looking at our fixtures, that would be a tough ask, and I'm a realist. I'm not someone that just goes, oh, yeah, we're still in the hunt for the title. fingers crossed we get a good draw. That said, there's some teams in the bottom half of the league at the moment that are playing really well. Romford in particular is a team that I probably want to avoid, if that makes sense, because I've learned too well that they can definitely turn teams over on their day. Fingers crossed I'll see you at the weekend.
I will see you on Sunday night. I'll come say hello.
Yeah, please do. Please do. It'll be great to see you.
Nice one. Thank you very much, mate. I'll see you soon.
My pleasure. Take care.
A huge thank you to Alex for joining me there. We took up a little bit more of his evening than I was planning, but we certainly covered every base. He's such a great talker. Like I said to him there, I'll probably bump into him this Sunday, and if not, I certainly hope to see him at the playoffs in April, as Solon and I are starting to have an upturn in their season, which is good to see. Right, well, thank you so much for listening and checking out this second episode of the week. It's going to be the last one of this week. Next week, of course, we'll have the roundup. And then I will be joined by Milton Keynes Thunder Romanian player Mario Ciru. So we'll be looking forward to catching up with Mario. Obviously, the Thunder's fortunes have taken a good turn in the last couple of weeks after they got a smash in at Chelmsford. They've gone to Oxford and taken a 7-3 win. So, yeah, looking forward to catching up with Mario, seeing how it's all going down at the Thunder. Don't forget, obviously, your 10% discount for Hockey Art Clothing is there. Use the code ZP10 once you've found what you want to buy on their website. Or if you fancy a little bit of Zero Pucks Given merch, you can hit the link in our link tree on our socials and find the merch store there. There's hoodies, t-shirts, hats, all in your team colours as well. So lots of good stuff to find out if you've got some spare pennies after the January payday. Thank you so much for listening, and I'll see you next time.
Sports Social Podcast Network.